Major funding for On Point is provided by Liberty Mutual for all your auto, home, life, and business insurance needs. Liberty Mutual. Responsibility. What's your policy?
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. From Arkansas governor to presidential candidate to Fox TV host, Republican Mike Huckabee has emerged as a smart, distinctive voice in the GOP. He won a raft of primaries in 08 and just may be back for more. So, has the political climate for a Mike Huckabee improved in the age of the Tea Party and Obama or not? We'll ask this hour On Point, a conversation with Mike Huckabee. You can join us. Do you like Mike? Is this his time? You can also comment at our website, onpointradio.org, or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Mike Huckabee joins us in a moment. But first, let's look at those primaries last night. Four states, very interesting results. Jonathan Martin, senior political reporter for Politico, joins us from Washington. Jonathan, thanks very much for being here.
Hey, Tom.
What's your headline down there, Jonathan?
I think the headline is the Democrats had a pretty good night last night. This has been a brutal year for the Democratic Party and for President Obama. It's going to be a tough November for them as well. But here on one summer night, they got a bit of good news, and that's because they nominated candidates are widely seen as electable, and Republicans nominated candidates that all have flaws across the four states that have or that had primaries last night. The biggest race, of course, being in Colorado, where Michael Bennett, the incumbent senator who had the strong support of President Obama in the White House, pulled off an easier-than-expected victory in his primary. And on the Republican side, they nominated somebody a bit further to the right than the GOP establishment would have preferred.
Let's start with that Colorado race. There's Bennett with the Obama people behind him, and there was his opponent, Mr. Romanoff, with Bill Clinton behind him, a more progressive liberal candidate, but he lost to the sort of Obama, you know, in line with the president guy.
Right. It was something of a proxy war, although, you know, Clinton endorsed and taped a robocall, but Clinton never actually got to Colorado to stump for Romanoff, and I think it would have been interpreted differently if he had. But there's no question that the White House breathing a sigh of relief this morning, because the last thing that they wanted was to have a spate of stories, suggesting that the last Democratic president had more political muscle nowadays than the one currently in the Oval Office.
So Obama has his man on the Democrat side there. What about on the Republican side of the ledger in the Colorado primaries, Jonathan?
So Ken Buck, a county prosecutor out there, the more conservative, won his race, beating Gene Norton, who's lieutenant governor, or who was lieutenant governor, who is more the sort of establishment pick, the safer pick. She was the preferred choice of a lot of folks in Washington, D.C. I think because of the environment, the Republicans probably have a slight advantage going into the fall in Colorado. But Democrats today do think their chances are better than they would have been because Buck is the nominee, has got more fodder out there that they can seize on to try and paint him as out of the mainstream and would be easier to take on than Norton would have.
So what's the lesson to Republicans watching this vote? I mean, it looks as though the Democrats may have gone toward the mainstream. Republicans went toward the more fiery candidate here.
Yeah, and that's how it seems here at first blush. Now, all of that may not matter 2 months from now if the political environment is what it seems, which right now is very friendly towards the GOP. In Colorado, a state that was part of that sort of Democratic resurgence in the Mountain West over the past few years, does seem to be sort of tilting back towards the GOP. But there's no question that in Colorado, Democrats have been helped by some of the GOP's own internal problems out there. The governor's race is a whole different story that we can get into if you want. But I think the Democrats have a slight advantage now than they would have if the GOP had nominated Gene Norton, but still, given the environment, it's going to be tough this fall for Democrats.
So just looking at Colorado for a second and the race for this Senate seat, we know how much that matters with the policy questions before the Senate. You've now got Ken Buck, up against Michael Bennett, who was brought in to take Ken Salazar's seat when he was made Interior Secretary. Are there polls yet? Do we have any idea? Does it look neck and neck? It sounds like you're giving Ken Buck the advantage here.
Yeah, and I think there's not a lot of great polling right now, obviously, because the primary was just last night. It'll be interesting to see here in the next week, 10 days, what the first surveys do look like. But I think Buck probably does have a slight advantage starting off because of the environment in Colorado. Like, this tells you all that you need to know. Bennett was helped by the Obama White House to a great degree. He got advertising help. He got fundraising help. He got turn off the vote help. He owes the Obama White House a huge debt of gratitude. Now, this morning, Michael Bennett goes on national TV, does the round of morning shows,
yep.
And he's asked by George Stephanopoulos, are you going to have President Obama come campaign for you this fall in the general election? And what does he do? He hedges, saying he's not sure about that. So I think that illustrates the challenge Democrats have this year. Even somebody that to a large degree was saved by President Obama the very next day when we commit to having him out there this fall because of his declining popularity.
And for the Republican winner of the primary then, this conservative Ken Buck, you're in famously independent state, Colorado. Does his Tea Party coloring help him then, Jonathan, or not?
I think in rural parts of the state it does. Folks who are probably inclined towards a more conservative candidate, center-right people. But I'll tell you get in and around Denver and those suburbs, especially around Denver, that have proved so pivotal in recent election year that helped President Obama win the state. And Ken Buck could have some real problems, especially with women. He made a comment during the primary that he should be nominated because he doesn't wear high heels.
As his opponent did.
Mm-hmm. Now, he was trying to be jocular, but there's no question that Democrats targeting women, especially independent women, are going to use that comment against him.
Let's unroll the map a little bit from west to east. We've got three more here, Minnesota, Georgia, Connecticut. What do you see in Minnesota last night, Jonathan?
Well, I think in Minnesota you had Mark Dayton, the former senator, self-funder, narrowly win his primary for the Democrats. I'm not sure Democrats wanted Mark Dayton to win. He's been sort of erratic in the past, and I think he will have a decent shot this fall because Minnesota obviously is a fairly blue state, but he was not the preferred candidate of the Democratic establishment. He will face Tom Emmer, who is a GOP state rep, who's got some baggage of his own, though, and has already had one campaign shakeup. This is one of those races where Democrats probably should win. Dayton can put a lot of his own personal wealth. Of course, he's one of the heirs to the Target fortune. He can put a lot of his own money into the race, Dayton can. It's a blue state. Democrats should win. But if the GOP does pull it out, it will just underscore what kind of a night Republicans are having in November.
Now, we're looking for Mike Huckabee to show up in the studio in just a minute here. But as we do, let's go to Georgia, where Sarah Palin lined up for one candidate, Mike Huckabee, and Newt Gingrich lined up for another in the Republican runoff in the gubernatorial race there. And it's too close to call, maybe, at this point, but a nose ahead for the Huckabee candidate. Tell us about that picture, Jonathan.
This was a real proxy war down in Georgia. You had Mike Huckabee and Newt Gingrich lining up behind Nathan Deal, the former congressman, while Romney and Palin, as you mentioned, were supporting Karen Handel. Now, Deal's margin as of early this morning is less than 1%, so Handel can request a runoff. I'm sorry, not a recount, rather.
Yep.
And that may be the case, but that would essentially be the sort of third part of this contest. The GOP had a primary, they had a runoff, and if now they have a recount, it will really extend this contest closer and closer to the fall. So the Democrats nominated in July former Governor Roy Barnes, who I'm sure is smiling this morning as seeing as how Republicans have protracted this race some. There's a lot of concern among national Republicans about Nathan Deal. They would have preferred Karen Handel, I think. But that said, this is Georgia. This is 2010. The Republicans probably have a leg up, regardless of if it's a Deal or Handel. But a lot of folks nationally think it's harder if Deal is, in fact, the nominee.
Does it tell us anything about the arm wrestling between potential 2012 Republican presidential candidates that Palin's candidate didn't win?
Never give too much weight to endorsements. I will say this, that the initial Palin endorsement definitely gave Handel a boost. It definitely put her on the map. It drew attention to her campaign. It lifted her in the primary. Now, Palin came back down right before the runoff and appeared with Handel, and I think probably helped her. But Handel was not very well known in a lot of parts of the state. So I think, you know, Palin has had a mixed record when it comes to endorsements. She's gotten credit for some of the ones that have won, and I think that this may be a case where she helped, but it wasn't ultimately decisive.
You had, and lastly, Connecticut there with Daniel Malloy, former mayor of Stamford, defeating Ned Lamont, multimillionaire, who had tried to oust Senator Joe Lieberman 4 years ago. Lamont couldn't do it again, and Malloy is the Democratic candidate. Does it mean anything?
Another example where national Democrats were quite pleased with the night that they had. You know, they prefer Malloy, somebody that had the support of the state party, former mayor of Stamford, somebody that was sort of seen as a safer pick, who knows the state, who can sort of navigate his way in a statewide campaign. Whereas Lamont, who of course famously beat Lieberman in that primary in 06, a Greenwich millionaire, somebody who was a bit quirky, I think Democrats were a bit more nervous about. So Malloy, the safer pick in that state, and I think will be formidable. He's facing Tom Foley, a Republican businessman, former ambassador under George W. Bush, who can spend a lot of his own money, but who's got pretty significant baggage himself. And, of course, as everybody's talking about this morning, that Senate race, Democrats have Peter Blumenthal, the AG, and Republicans nominated last night, McMahon, the former CEO of the World Wrestling Entertainment Group.
Jonathan Martin with Politico. Always great to have you. Thanks for being here. Listeners, stand by. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. Talking this hour with Republican Mike Huckabee about politics in the age of Obama and his early view on the campaign in 2012 and this fall's election. Joining me now from New York is Mike Huckabee, former Arkansas governor and 2008 presidential candidate. He's now host of the Fox weekend show Huckabee and the daily radio commentary The Huckabee Report. He heads the political action committee HuckPAC, which has organized thousands of volunteers around the country in support of conservative Republican candidates. His new daily talk show in previews on Fox now is The Huckabee Show. Mike Huckabee, welcome back to On Point.
Well, thank you very much, Tom. It's a pleasure to be with you.
So what's the message you hear in the primaries? Four states last night, some conservative Republican winners, some less, to the edge Democrat winners. How do you read it, Mike?
Well, I think that there is generally an anti-incumbency mood. People are mad at the institution of government. So I don't think it's necessarily great news for Republicans that people are embracing them, and I think Republicans will make a big mistake if they strut down Main Street congratulating themselves for all the wonderful support, because that's not what's happening. People are angry that government is out of touch with them. They're angry that government is doing things that it tends to hurt their families more than helps their families, and if the Republicans were in power doing the same things, people would be just as angry with them. So what we're seeing is similar to what we saw in 2006 when the Republicans were in trouble because they were in charge at that time.
Where does that leave you, Mike Huckabee? You famously said, I don't have the quote right in front of me, you know, but I'm conservative, but I'm not angry. I'm not mad. If the Republican electorate is mad, if they're angry, does that cut you out?
There is always that danger, Tom, and I think the exact quote was, I'm a conservative, but I'm not mad at anybody over it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's still the way I feel. I do worry in some respects that our country may be getting to the place where we're getting to be virtually ungovernable. And that is because we have this attitude, we want to have our side win, their side lose. We've got to respect the fact that Democrats aren't wrong all the time, Republicans aren't right all the time. I tend to think as a Republican that we're right most of the time. But that doesn't mean that there's not something that could that might be benefited to the country by incorporating ideas that aren't entirely our own. And in fact, the reality of governing is unless you have all the votes, unless you can just go ahead and do what you want with utter reckless disregard for anywhere from 40 to 49% of the rest of the population, then you had better incorporate some of those ideas, or else you won't be able to govern for long.
But where does that leave you, Governor Huckabee? I mean, there you are with your, you know, I'm not angry at anybody about it. And here's this angry electorate. You say the country may be virtually ungovernable. That sounds pretty apocalyptic. Can that really be true? And if it's not entirely true, how do you get a Huckabee candidacy going in an angry GOP?
Well, it's interesting that often in the campaigns you have sometimes the most extreme candidates getting all the attention. Frankly, it's good press. It's good cannon fodder for television, radio, and newspapers and the blogs. But as it turned out, the two candidates that ended up winning the party nominations in 2008, John McCain, considered by most to be more moderate, it wasn't Tom Tancredo, mm-hmm. who probably would be classified as the angriest of the angry, and it wasn't Dennis Kucinich.
But that was before the economic meltdown. That was before the Tea Party. You know, a lot of water under the bridge, angry water.
Well, there was a lot of angry water. Unfortunately, and this is one of the sad realities of politics, it has so much more to do with money than it does with message. I wish that were different, Tom. If it were different, I might be somewhere different today. I might have made the nomination, might have won. Didn't happen, and largely it was a financial deficit that made it very difficult for me to respond to a lot of the multi-million-dollar attacks that some of these far right-wing conservative groups like the Club for Growth, who I not so lovingly call the Club for Greed, ran to try to question my conservative credentials.
But explain that for us, Governor, because if it's money, not, you know, one by one Americans making up their own mind, are you saying, I mean, the Tea Party's out there. There are a lot of people show up at their rallies. Are you saying that's fake? That's somehow big money putting them out there? You know, why money if it's angry millions who, you know, some of your prominent fellow Republicans are claiming are behind them?
No, in fact, I would say that the Tea Party is the best hope that we've seen to really shake up the political system. You see incumbents who have money, who have incumbency, who are going home this year. Some of them are leaving Washington in body bags instead of, you know, on a parade because the Tea Party has changed somewhat the dynamics of this year's elections, specifically for Republicans. And it has made it so that voter sentiment and voter intensity is replacing just the sheer amount of dollars. A candidate still has to have a certain amount of dollars to get his or her message out and to defend himself or herself against an attack. But it becomes of less importance when voters are intense and they're focused on the races, they're paying attention, they're understanding the issues, they're going to meetings, they're listening, they're challenging. So the opposite is in effect in terms of money import because of the Tea Parties. And again, this is specifically and more especially within Republican circles, although I think it's washing back on Democrats, especially those Democrats who are showing contempt for their very bosses, which is one of the things that has fueled the Tea Party movement even more, the kind of encounters that we've seen on videotape where Pete Stark essentially is dismissive, where Arlen Specter was very contemptuous toward people at one of his town halls, other Democrats who just don't even have a town hall because they refuse to be held accountable for their votes. This is only creating an extraordinarily new level of intensity for those who are dissatisfied with their government.
But
whether or not they agree or whether or not they identify personally as Tea Party participants.
But what does an I'm not angry Mike Huckabee say in front of a Tea Party crowd that is angry to get their support?
Well, there's certain things I'm angry about. I'm angry that our government is spending money it doesn't have and borrowing money that it can't afford to pay back. I don't think the tenor or tone of my speech is one of the veins bulging out in my neck and people seeing my face turn crimson, but there is a sense in which I think what I would say to them is anger is a good thing. It can be a highly motivational emotion, but you have to channel it. Anger left to itself is like a fire that is not directed. Fire directed cooks our food and it warms our homes. Fire that has no sense of direction and channel can burn our house down. That's what we have to explain. The anger, the rage that we're seeing among voters can be the best thing that ever happened to America, but it has to be channeled and used in a way that ultimately has a positive effect rather than simply a destructive effect. This is no time to say, I'm against everybody and I'm against everything. This ought to be to say, I want government to be responsible with my tax dollars. I want them to take less from my paycheck. I want them to quit bailing out recklessly run businesses, let those businesses fail just like a small business owner would fail if he mismanages his business and takes more money out of the profits than he can afford to take and won't pay his people. If that happens in a small business, the guy goes out of business. He puts a out of business sign on the front door. Just because it's a bank, because it's a brokerage house, doesn't mean that the taxpayers who are successfully running their households and businesses ought to bail these people out. It's absurd.
You think the country would have been better off if we'd let the if George W. Bush and Republicans and Democrats and Obama had let the banks go down and let Detroit go down?
Absolutely. In the long term, we would. And I know that.
How long? I mean, 50 years from now, or
no? Here's the thing. First of all, when people say let them go down, we don't know what would have happened because we never found out. You know, we had these apocalyptic messages that if we don't do this right now, today, then the banks will melt down, the financial system will collapse. Well, how do we know that? That's like saying if we hadn't done the economic stimulus, we would have lost all these jobs. Turns out we did the economic stimulus. We still lost all those jobs. Our unemployment are still at 10%. They weren't supposed to go above 8. It didn't work. When we hear about, well, we've got to save the car companies, Ford didn't have to be bailed out. It's doing quite well. In fact, it's had its best year ever because it didn't take government money. Just how far do we take the subsidy? If a baseball team is losing and isn't putting enough fan seats or fans' rear ends in the seats, should we bail them out because, after all, we can't let them fail? That's an absurdity. It's not the way that a free market system should work. And it's certainly not the way it can work and must work.
Mike Huckabee of Arkansas, of the GOP, of Fox News, is with us. And, Governor, we've got a lot of people lining up to talk with you. I'm going to turn to them in just a moment, but let's get it on the table. Are you running for the GOP nomination for the presidency in the 2012 race?
Tom, it's a decision that has not been made. I haven't ruled anything out, so I'm not going to say, oh, no, I hadn't even thought about it. But it is absolutely not something that I have decided to do. And there are so many, many factors involved. First of all, and foremost, I want to see how these elections turn out this year. That's critical.
What will you look for to help you decide in the midterms whether you're in or out?
Well, I want to see if the country's really ready to give responsible, and I use that term very decidedly, responsible Republicans an opportunity to lead. And that means if they elect a good number of Republicans to the House and to the Senate, and those are people who go with the sense of let's solve problems. I would not be interested in running if I thought that the mood of the election was going to be about let's see what we can do to destroy the Democratic Party. That's not something that really lights my fire. Solving problems would. How do we bring this country out of the extraordinary debt that we've dug ourselves into? How do we start making sure that we create a business environment where business owners are willing to hire people again? Right now, they're hunkered down. Nobody wants to hire. And the main reason is because they don't know what the cost of doing business is going to be a year from now. What's the cost of health care? What's the cost of their taxes? What's the cost of regulation? And if you don't know what it's going to cost you to do business, including what is it going to cost you to hire somebody beyond their paycheck, beyond that salary, you just don't hire.
But I hear you saying if Washington's too angry or the GOP is, then you're not in. But I hear a mixed message. You say you're happy for the Tea Party, and yet that seems to be a locus of a lot of this anger. And some of the most angry candidates certainly have Tea Party backing.
Well, I'm going to say what I did before. The Tea Party is a good thing because these are angry people. But I think in most cases the Tea Party people are angry in a right way. They want responsibility, and they want accountability. Those are two things that most members of Congress have completely failed in giving them. They're not being responsible with their decisions. They're making recklessly stupid decisions about the current debt, the deficit spending, and then when they are spending money, it's not to stimulate the economy. It's to create these pet projects. Last week, we discovered there was a $72,000 expense to test how monkeys reacted to cocaine. Now, that's $72,000 up a monkey's nose that doesn't do one taxpayer a bit of good. And I know you say, well, $72,000 is not really that much money. But accumulated, when you start adding up the billions and ultimately trillions of dollars that we spend, we borrow, and we recklessly waste as a government, yes, it does matter.
What if it helps figure out how to get people off cocaine in this country? We've got a lot of people with drug problems in this country.
Well, I think while we're in a huge deficit situation, non-essential spending needs to just be put on hold. And I'm not sure that testing the effect of cocaine on a monkey is the greatest urgent need when you've got millions of Americans who don't have a job today. It just doesn't, I think, to most people who are in their 38 week of unemployment, if you ask them what is more important to you, creating a business environment where your employer can bring you back to work or finding out how a monkey reacts to cocaine, I don't think you'd have a person having a long pause to figure that one out.
Mike Huckabee joins us from New York. Governor, stand by. Let's go to our callers, Nashville, Tennessee. William, you're on the air with Mike Huckabee.
Hi, Tom, and hi, Mr. Huckabee. It's a pleasure to speak with you. Thanks for taking the call.
You bet.
I generally have voted for a lot of Democrats in my life, but I do respect your approach, and I appreciate the fact that you are willing to be, I think, a reasonable, you know, as far as I can tell, at all times. You know, even though I disagree with you, I got maybe a two-parter for you.
Okay.
I would say that, you know, you represent or you're a member of a party that used to have people like Lowell Weicker and maybe John Danforth would be another example who would be considered moderates. So the first part is, would you be willing to take that label on? Are you a moderate? And the second part is, you know, you were talking about irresponsible spending, and that's one of the key things that, you know, Gingrich and Palin are always going to talk about legitimately. But, you know, you have Alan Simpson and Erskine Bowles both coming together bipartisan, you know, saying it's going to take more than just cuts. It's going to take more than spending cuts. It's going to take revenue, you know, and revenue means taxes. So are you willing to step up on that? And that's my question.
Both good questions. William, thank you. Mike Huckabee.
I would label myself a conservative, not a moderate, at least ideologically. I think my attitude and spirit might be maybe labeled by some to be more moderate. Moderate in tone, not in conviction. I have strong convictions about what I think's right, what I think's wrong. I'm willing to stand on those without apology or reticence. But I don't think that that necessarily means that I have to yell and scream at people who disagree with me. In fact, I find that my most meaningful conversations are with people who are my polar opposites. I have more traction. I learn more. I even sharpen my own point of view when I talk to people I don't agree with. I don't really get a lot out of a conversation where everything I say, the person with whom I'm speaking says, yep, that's right. So that's why, do I have strong feelings? Yes, on pretty much everything. But it doesn't mean that I'm not willing to sit down, and maybe there will be a piece of that, and I'll say, you know, that makes sense. And let me give you a specific example before I go into the second part of your question.
Mm-hmm.
When I was a governor, I governed in a state where 89% of my legislature was Democrat. I mean, I had the most lopsided legislature in the country. I could have gone in there and said, okay, guys, here's the Republican piece of legislation, and I would have had my head handed to me. What I had to do was build roads, improve schools, create jobs. And frankly, nobody cares whether the schools are better because a Democrat or Republican did it. What they want to make sure is that they just got better for their kids.
You raised taxes to do that. Would you do that again to address the federal deficit?
At the federal level, I don't think it's a matter of needing more money as much as it is a redirected budget. Now, one thing I do believe in very strongly, Tom, is I think that part of our problem is the structure of the tax system. I'm a strong advocate of what's known as the fair tax, which would eliminate all of the taxes that we currently have on our productivity. We wouldn't have income tax, personal or corporate. We wouldn't have capital gains taxes, inheritance taxes. All of those taxes would be eliminated. By the way, that would eliminate the IRS. We would have a consumption tax. We would pay tax at the point of consumption, not at the point of productivity. We need productivity. We shouldn't penalize it. We ought to reward it.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour with Republican Mike Huckabee about politics in the age of Obama and the Tea Party, getting his early view on the campaign in 2012 and this fall's elections, the midterms coming up right now. Mike Huckabee is host of the Fox Weekend Show Huckabee of the daily radio commentary, The Huckabee Report, and his new daily talk show being previewed on Fox is The Huckabee Show. Linda, in Alexander City, Alabama, you're on the air with Governor Huckabee.
Hi, how are you?
Pretty well.
Good. I guess I'm not sure if it's a question exactly, but, well, maybe it is. I am a member of a Tea Party. I am angry about a lot of things in this that's going on with this government, especially our president, Barry Sotoro, S-O-E-T-O-R-O. You need to Google it. That's his real name, Obama's real name.
President Barack Obama.
Okay. Yeah, Barack Obama.
What's your question, Linda? Or what's your...
The question is, well, I've always been a Republican, always voted Republican, but from now on I will be considering myself an independent because I feel like both parties, both Democrats and the Republicans, have let down the American public in major, major ways. And I'm not the only person that feels that way. That's why there's such a disconnect between the population and Washington, because Washington just doesn't get it.
Give us a question for Mike Huckabee.
Okay. Mike Huckabee, why are you a member of the CFR, the Council on Foreign Relations, when they are directly tied to the Bilderberg Group?
Well, first of all, Linda, I'm not a member of the CFR. Whoever told you that had no idea what they're talking about. That's absurd. I've never been a member ever in my life. And that's the kind of stuff I've had to put up with, where people completely misrepresent who I am, whom I'm affiliated with, and what I stand for. And it's one of the things about politics that's very frustrating to those of us who actually play the game, is that we have to defend ourselves against stuff that has no basis in truth whatsoever. Zero.
Do you have a problem with the Council on Foreign Relations, Mike Huckabee? A lot of estimates.
I have a problem with it existing, but I don't need to be a member of it, and I have no intentions of being a member of it. For some conservatives, you know, it's an anathema. You know, I think it's like any other organization. You go to a restaurant, you look at the menu. If there's something you like, you order it. If there's something you don't, you leave it on the menu. But I've never been a member. But to constantly be accused of being a member is, to me, tantamount to being called a liberal or other things that I've been called, which, again, it's part of the political atmosphere in which we live.
Linda, you had a question on Governor Huckabee's position on immigration and immigrants.
Right. What is your position now? I know you used to support giving scholarships to the children of illegal immigrants. What's it now?
Well, first of all, I believe that the failures, the fact that the government hasn't secured the border, that's their responsibility, and they failed at it miserably. They've allowed many people to come to this country illegally, and it's been as much something that the government is at fault for not putting any turnstiles in the stadium. You know, if kids want to watch a baseball game and people say, come on in, sit wherever you want and free concessions, kids are going to go to the ball game. If you're a father and you want to feed your kids and there are no locks on the doors to America, people are going to come in by the droves, and that's what's happened.
And so they're here, and in Arkansas, you were open to helping immigrants and children, as Linda says. What about now? There's an awful lot of pushback against that kind of position.
Well, let me be clear, because I'm not for an amnesty program. Here's what I did favor, and I still favor it, and this makes people mad at me, and it probably makes Linda mad at me, and if it does, so be it. But here's the issue. When a kid comes to this country, and he's 4 years old, and he had no choice in it, his parents came illegally. He still, because he is in this state, it's the state's responsibility. In fact, it is the state's legal mandate to make sure that child is in school. So let's say that kid goes to school. That kid's in our school from kindergarten through the 12th grade. He graduates as valedictorian because he's a smart kid, and he works his rear end off, and he becomes the valedictorian of the school. The question is he better off going to college and becoming a neurosurgeon or a banker or whatever he might become, and becoming a taxpayer, and in the process having to apply for and achieve citizenship, or should we make him pick tomatoes? I think it's better if he goes to college and becomes a citizen. So I did support a bill in my state, and I would support it today. I don't want anyone to think I've backed away from it. that you do not punish a child for something the parent did. And if, in fact, the provision in the law says that in order to obtain the scholarship, you have to be in the process of applying for citizenship and becoming legal, then I'd rather have that kid a neurosurgeon than a tomato picker. I'd rather him be a taxpayer than a tax taker. And for that, I offer no apology. Now, if that causes people to say, well, I'll never vote for that guy, then great. There's plenty of people out there that'll tell you that they'd take an asthmatic child who's choking and make him stand on the hospital steps and let him continue to cough because they didn't get his legal status checked. I'm sorry. That's not the way that I was raised. I don't think that that's the kind of country we are.
Mike Huckabee, what about the now perhaps related issue of the 14th Amendment and birthright citizenship? We've got a Facebook question from Scott asking, what's your position on that? And then with a kind of a jab to some Republicans here, I guess, he's asked why it's okay to tinker with some of the Constitution, but not other parts of the Constitution. Where are you on birthright citizenship, 14th Amendment?
Well, it doesn't matter where I am. The Supreme Court has decided that in the, I think, in three different centuries, the 18th, the 19th, and the 20th, and are the maybe the 19th, the 20th, and the 21st, and in every single instance, they have affirmed that if you are physically born in this country, you're considered to be a citizen. The only option there is to change the Constitution.
Would you do that?
I don't think that's even possible. I think the greater issue
would you favor it?
No, let me tell you what I would favor. I would favor having controlled borders. I very much believe that we ought to have a secure border, that nobody ought to get into this country who doesn't have some legal basis to be here. And it's not to keep people out. It's to have control of the people who do get in so that we're allowing people in that we can absorb. It's allowing people in that are going to be law abiders, not law breakers, and keeping terrorists and people who are not coming here to do us any good. But well, that's where the federal government has miserably and hopelessly failed us, is that they've not focused on the securing of a border.
Let's get a call from Brighton, Massachusetts. And Mike, you're on the air with Mike Huckabee.
Thanks for taking my call,
mm-hmm.
Tom.
Mm-hmm.
You asked Mr. Huckabee early on whether he would have supported the bank bailout, and he said no. And the reason was that how would we even know that there was going to be a collapse?
Mm-hmm.
I saw a Frontline episode, and on September 28th, 2008, Chairman Bernanke and Secretary Paulson called for a meeting up on Capitol Hill, emergency meeting. This is the day when Paulson put that two-page bill in his pocket.
Yep.
And when they were up there and they were discussing the trouble they were in, Bernanke, Harry Reid said, you don't understand how the Senate works. You're asking us for $700 billion. The Senate doesn't work that way. What's going to happen if you don't get this check tomorrow?
Right.
Then Bernanke looked at him and said, well, you won't have an economy on Monday. So the idea that Mr. Huckabee says that he wouldn't have supported this bailout, and how do we know we would have had a collapse? It just seems so unserious and so wrong. And if there's any other further, evidence that you need, Henry Paulson wrote a book about the whole affair. And the subtitle of the book is Inside the Race to Stop the Collapse of the Global Financial System.
Mike, let us put it to Governor Huckabee. Governor, are you being unserious when you kind of, maybe to some ears, blithely say, well, we don't know. It might not have collapsed. There's serious people saying we would have had global depression and collapse. Our caller says it's not serious to take that kind of neutral position on that. Could you have done that?
I'm not being neutral. I'm being rather clear that we had no constitutional authority to do what the federal government did, and that's to bail out private businesses that were recklessly and poorly mismanaged. When he says, well, here's what Paulson said. Okay, so that's what Paulson said. Paulson might be wrong, and so may Ben Bernanke. I mean, we've got a Treasury Secretary now that didn't even understand how to pay his own taxes, for heaven's sakes. The fact that you've got people in positions who are scrambling about, sweating their heads off because they were convinced that we were going to collapse within a weekend, again, that's something we don't know. But here's what I think.
But let me just ask you on that. If you were president, and
I
you're
think it's very important
mm-hmm.
to understand.
Mm-hmm.
If you think that there's not a seriousness in my tone, let me be very serious.
Mm-hmm.
What we're doing to our children and grandchildren is we've mortgaged off their future. The difference between my parents' generation and the generation of Hank Paulson and the Ben Bernankes, which happens to be my generation, is that the greatest generation, that one before us, sacrificed themselves to give their kids a better life. Our generation seems to be willing to sacrifice our kids so that we don't have to accept the responsibility for the stupid mistakes that we made in trying to get rich quick off a bunch of derivative schemes, which really turned Wall Street into a casino as opposed to a place where people invested in actual goods and services and their intrinsic worth. Instead, they were betting on what things might be worth in the future, turning it into Las Vegas East, and it caught up with them.
Was that a result of Republican-led deregulation?
It was a result of both parties being more concerned about campaign contributions than they were in taking care of the taxpayers' business. Let's not forget that it was back in 2003 that when George Bush wanted to bring some heavier regulation on Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, that Barney Frank stood up and said, there isn't an issue. We don't have a problem. And there aren't any issues that are related to Freddie Mac and Fannie Mae. So did Maxine Waters. So I hear people blame the Republicans and what Bush failed to do in regulating. But when he tried to bring some regulatory authority, believing that there were some problems at those two agencies, it was Democrats, including Chris Dodd, Barney Frank, Maxine Waters, and others from the Democratic Party, who kept that from happening.
If you were president and your Federal Reserve chairman and your Treasury secretary said, we need to throw some billions in this dike, or we're going over the dam here, we're going into a global depression, could you say, oh, no, I'll take that risk?
Well, I try not to get into the hypothetical, the what-ifs, but what I would do is to realize that the president is sworn to uphold the Constitution. There's no constitutional authority for the United States government to bail out private enterprise and to pick winners and losers in the marketplace and to say, this one's going to live, this one's going to die. We're going to save Goldman Sachs. We're going to make sure that all of Paulson's buddies in his old firm are going to make it. But those poor dumb saps at Lehman Brothers, they're going down the toilet.
Tom in Burlington, Vermont, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Hi, Mr. Huckabee. I just wanted to ask about science funding, the stance on science funding. Because he already seemed to make an anti-science statement when he was talking about the cocaine studies.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that his stance on climate change and things are questionable. It's the 21st century. And I'd be worried about somebody trying to become president, or anything else for that matter, who puts their religion over their country. And I'd just like to ask Mr. Huckabee, if asked the question, you put your religion ahead of your country, and your savior ahead of your country, how is that going to affect science funding in the future if you were to be in a position of greater power?
Tom, thanks for your call. Governor Huckabee.
Well, no offense, but I think it's a ridiculous question. I was a governor 10 and a half years, and I don't think you will ever find evidence in my state when I was a governor and chief executive that I ever tried to take the Capitol Dome off and replace it with a steeple. Am I a Christian? Yes. Does my faith have an important role in my life? You bet it does. Do I apologize for it? No. Does that mean that I govern with a way to try to impose those religious convictions on others by government fiat? Absolutely not. I totally disagree with the characterization that somehow I'm anti-science because I think spending $72,000 to study a cocaine effect on a monkey means I'm anti-science. It means I'm anti-stupidity. I'm anti-waste. I think that money ought to be spent wisely.
What if that helped understand human drug addiction? I mean, we spend billions on that every year. $72,000 might look like a bargain if it scientifically helped us understand addiction.
Well, I think somebody's got a lot of explaining to do to believe that that's going to be the most effective way and that it's something that is of such urgency. But let's talk about some scientific issues. I would support the National Institutes for Health to find a cure for cancer. I think that that's something we ought to be diligently working on. I think we ought to be developing greater technologies to find cures or at least preventions for diseases like Alzheimer's and dementia. I would increase the budget of NASA. I think it's a tragedy that we have made major cuts in our space program because the space program has not only provided extraordinary capacity for us to engage in the obvious ideas of the world beyond us. But the spinoffs from the space industry have given us the platform for most of our technology and most of the things that we take for granted today, whether it's solid-state circuitry in our computers and television sets and our cell phones and watches. We forget just how vital the space program has been to our culture and way of life.
Governor Huckabee, we've just got you for another minute. I have to ask you about your current affiliation with Fox News. You've got a couple of shows there and a new one that you're rolling out. You're on Fox. Sarah Palin is on Fox with her new show. Is it a good thing for potential political leaders of the country to be affiliated with a particular media outlet like that? I mean, is it gives you exposure, gives you a platform? Is it good for the country?
Well, I think it's a matter of people have a right to have a job. And one of my shows is on the Fox News channel. The other one is not on Fox News. It's mm-hmm. on Fox Broadcast, which is a completely separate division. I don't see a big problem with it. I think, you know, the fact is you've got, I would argue that some of the networks are very much organs of the far left, and I've never heard that be a problem or a complaint.
I haven't seen many presidential candidates coming out from there lately. Sarah Palin's I'm looking at a poll here. She's the only candidate ahead of you in the polls. What do you make of that?
She's a very popular person. A lot of people love her. She's a celebrity, and I respect that very much.
Mike Huckabee, we wish you luck with your new The Huckabee Show. Thanks very much for being with us. And with the Fox Weekend Show, Huckabee, and the daily radio commentary, The Huckabee Report. Governor, thanks for your time today. Thank you for joining us.
You bet, Tom. Thank you.
Former governor of Arkansas and Republican presidential candidate, Mike Huckabee. Listeners, you can continue this conversation at onpointradio.org. Follow us on Facebook. Join in on Twitter at onpointradio. And thanks for joining us today. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.